Skin lesions are the third most common reason why returning travelers seek medical attention. Common things are still common in these patients, such as scabies, bed bugs, and superficial fungal and bacterial infections. In this dialogue, Dr. Jose Dario Martinez and Dr. Christine Warren discuss some of the more intriguing infectious skin diseases in returned travelers. With Ebola in the news recently, this is a topic of concern to dermatologists and all physicians in the public health sector.
Hello, this is Dr. Christine Warren, and I have the pleasure of introducing today Dr. Jose Dario Martinez, who joins us from Monterrey, Mexico. He is a professor of internal medicine in dermatology at the University Hospital. So welcome, Dr. Martinez. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Just to start, I just wanted to say that the topic of this dialogue is very important because skin lesions are actually the third most common complaint in return travelers after diarrhea and upper respiratory illness. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And the differential diagnosis for skin lesions that occur during or after travel can be quite broad. But in general, are dermatoses among return travelers in the U.S. and the Americans more commonly infections and infestations rather than non-infectious?
Yeah, the most common skin problems are cutaneous larvae, migrants.
Okay.
And bed bugs.
Mm-hmm.
And skin infections. But it's a lot of... Another infestations, diseases, and infectious diseases that I'm going to talk about today. So it's very important because to know these infectious diseases and infestations because the differential diagnosis is very broad.
True. And in narrowing that differential, when you see these patients, what travel-specific history is important to obtain from the patient?
Well, it's very important the history of what country they travel in. If during the rain season, during the dry season, if the patient gets exposed to insect bites or raw food or drinking tap water or do not use the appropriate measures, preventive measures, like using repellents or appropriate clothes, mm-hmm. like hats or use of towels in the beach. And it's very important the destination of where these people go. And again, if it's a packer, if this person went to a hostel or hotel, and that's very important. And if these people have contact with another people, maybe sick people, mm-hmm. like scabies.
Sure.
And exposure. A lot of people go travel without any protective measures. Again, it's very important this because prevention is essential in the diseases.
Right, and do you find that folks that are traveling, do most of them not have any pre-travel counseling? You're probably seeing a lot of people coming back from tourist destinations and you're seeing them more after, so the prevention or the topic of prevention couldn't have been addressed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's correct.
Okay. And then what about traveler-specific history in regards to the patient themselves? What do you want to know about the patient in terms of either medical history or vaccination history? What were the most important things to know?
Well, as we know, it is recommended when you travel to certain countries, do the vaccine thing. And also, some people are taking some kind of medications like doxycycline for malaria. But in general, in this infections and infestation that we are talking about today, there is a common measures. It's like appropriate clothes, repellents, because there are no vaccines for dengue or another kind of these specific diseases. Yeah.
It's important for people to know that commonly returned travelers have more cosmopolitan diseases, such as bed bugs, like you mentioned, scabies, superficial fungal infections, and bacterial infections such as staph, strep, and MRSA. So you should always be considering those. But today we'll talk about a few other things, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay. So let's begin with cutaneous larvae migrans. How can we quickly recognize this?
Well, cutaneous larvae migrans is the most common infestations that a return traveler have. The symptoms are very particular because it's a creeping eruption mm-hmm. with a lot of itch. The larva goes beneath the skin. It's a subcutaneous but not that deep, like larval migrans profundus that we're going to talk about later.
Sure.
And it's a creeping erosion with a serpentine pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the patient has two or three lesions, mainly in their feet or foot or in the buttocks, in the parts of the body that are in contact with the sand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very important. They do not protect themselves with a towel or something, or sandals, because they usually they walk bare feet in these beaches that are contaminated with this larva.
And the larva are from the feces of
the feces
animals?
Of the dogs and cats. If you see dogs and cats walking in the beach, you
find another beach.
Yeah.
Okay.
Find another beach.
All right. And so what are the hot spots for picking this up and the most common causes?
Well, the hot spots is my country, Mexico. Mm-hmm. Also, Brazil, Colombia, Venezuela, Jamaica are hot spots of this disease. In Mexico, all the Gulf of Mexico coast is a very hot spot for this disease.
So when you go to the beach, are you always wearing your shoes and you're sitting on towels?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And when patients come to see you, do they say that they're picking up this creeping eruption while they're still on their vacation? Or is it appearing, are they noticing it sometime after they return from their travels?
It appears later because the larva has a strong proteases that allows the larva to penetrate into the skin. But it lasts about 5 to 15 days.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the symptoms and this creeping eruption? It's not immediately. So maybe the patient recalls, I was at the beach last week, and then this eruption appear.
And what is your preferred treatment? I know no treatment is an option, but probably not desired by most patients. So what's your first line therapy?
My first line therapy is albendazole. Albendazole, 400 milligrams to twice a day for 3 to 5 days, or ivermectin is a second choice, or it's almost work the same.
Okay. And why do you typically use albendazole first before ivermectin? Just because of your personal preference, or do you find, you said that you think that they're equally efficacious?
Well, it's written that albendazole is first line.
Okay.
I use ivermectin because the side effects of albendazole, some people don't want to take that because they have to avoid alcohol. So I prefer ivermectin one day, and that's
okay.
It.
And then who gets the topical thiabendazole? Anyone? I mean, children, or who do you use topical therapy for?
Maybe it's a small lesion, or you know, the patient cannot have the opportunity to buy this medication. I prefer systemic medication than topical.
So now let's move on to a resurgent disease, something you mentioned in the introduction, dengue fever. How is this transmitted, and where is it most common, or where is it becoming more common?
Well, it's a resurgent disease, as I said before, because the number of cases around the world, and especially in Mexico and Central and South America, there has been a lot of reports of a lot of patients with this disease. It's the most common disease transmitted by an insect vector called Aedes aegypti. Sometimes when you travel to these tropical or subtropical countries during the rain season, and if you don't use appropriate clothes or repellents, this mosquito, the Aedes aegypti, the female, during the day, it can bite you.
Okay.
It's only during the day. Yeah.
And then patients are presenting with what type of symptoms?
Well, according to the World Health Organization, the diagnosis of dengue depends on the symptoms. Fever, rash, arthralgia, myalgia, headache. And then some people, because the dengue virus, it have four serotypes, the most common, number one, most severe, number two and three. So in travelers, maybe the disease is not going to be that bad because they're exposed for the first time.
Sure.
Maybe they get Denver virus one. So The classic dengue fever is the so-called breakbone disease, yeah. But 1% of those people can get a complication, dengue hemorrhagic fever or dengue shock syndrome, okay. Yeah.
And you were saying that, and that's more common if someone's being exposed the second time, or that can happen also if you're exposed the first time?
Well, the first time is not very bad.
Just a mild?
It's a mild disease, especially in travelers.
Sure.
Because in an endemic area, like in my country, in my state, we have a lot of cases this year, because this year we had a lot of rain. So the mosquito is very dangerous during the rainy season and then during the summer, especially the summer and close to the autumn season, yeah.
Is there a rapid test to diagnose dengue fever? Or no? Is it more of a clinical diagnosis, or serology is done? Or?
Very, very good question. The serology includes IgM or IgG. IgM is positive around the fifth day of the start of the disease, and the IgG is very important because if it's positive, maybe it's showing a recurrent infection. So it's dangerous that you have both positive. Because a lot of people travel to the same place 1 year and then the other year, so they are in risk. Also, you can use PCR or NS1, like a rapid test to diagnose dengue, yeah.
So it sounds like prevention, especially for dengue fever, is very important, counseling about wearing kind of repellents and using mosquito nets.
Yeah, because there is no vaccine yet.
And the treatment is mostly symptomatic, or is in supportive? Kind of possibly even ICU admission, it sounds like.
Maybe, sometimes, but essentially it's bed rest. Mm-hmm. You have to use a mosquito net to avoid the healthy mosquitoes, bite these people, and then transmit the diseases to another patients. And the use of acetaminophen, just for the fever, because aspirin is no good, because the thrombocytopenia that sometimes these people have can cause a lot of bleeding. There is the main complication, the plasma leak and the bleeding. So that's why this is called dengue hemorrhagic fever. And then the dengue shock syndrome is very severe. The patient can die. It happens during the fourth and seventh day of the disease. This is the crucial phase of the disease. If the patient goes well, nothing's going to happen.
So this is something that you should really be clinically suspicious of and really keep an eye on these patients if they're showing any signs of dengue.
An emerging disease here in the Americas is called chikungunya fever.
Okay.
Very important because in last December in San Martin Island, they're reporting 2 cases in December. Now we are in March. There is around 2,000 or more reported cases of chikungunya fever here in the Americas. And you know, the U.S. Travelers like to go to those islands and the Caribbean island, and then they can bring back here this mosquito. It's called the mosquito Albopictus and Aedes aegypti. There's these two mosquitoes transmit the chikungunya fever. And the most feared complication is the arthritis. Because this is like the dengue, the same symptoms. It's not mortal or severe like dengue, but this patient have polyarthritis and a chronic arthritis after that.
Thank you for bringing that up. So cutaneous leishmaniasis. So how do New World and Old World leishmaniasis differ?
Okay. New World is in the Americas. The leishmanias involved are Leishmania mexicana and Leishmania, now called Viania, Brasiliensis, and Panamanensis. But there are almost 20 species of Leishmania. And the Old World is caused mainly by Leishmania major and Leishmania tropica. The main thing here is to know by PCR test what Leishmania you catch it, like a cutaneous souvenir with you.
Right.
Because these lesions starts like a papule and ends in an ulcer. a very bad ulcer. But Leishmania mexicana, you need treatment for that. You can just clean the wound and that's it. But Leishmania or Viania brasiliensis or Panamanensis are very aggressive. They need to be treated by systemic treatment. So the difference is...
And by aggressive, you mean there's a risk of mucocutaneous or visceral involvement with those?
Yeah. Mainly mucocutaneous. Mucocutaneous lesions, the so-called tapir face in these patients, the deformity of the face is similar like this mammal called tapir. So it's a very feared complication, this one.
And when you mentioned diagnosis by or differentiation by PCR, is that PCR done on the tissue or is that done, is that serologic or how is that PCR
done? It's in the tissue.
Okay, so from the biopsy specimen.
Biopsy specimen, yes.
Okay. And you mentioned that it kind of starts as a papule and then can potentially ulcerate. So is that the main clinical presentation that you see or is that when you're suspicious of...
Well, in travelers, talking about travelers, not the people that live there, the most common sites of affected in your body are the hands or the ears. The so-called chiclero ulcer is typically on the ears of the people that works in the chicle tree, you know, the gums, the gum.
Sure.
Chicle is in
like
Spanish.
Chewing gum?
Yes, that's what I mean. And... you see now this old world leishmaniasis, maybe in the soldiers, the U.S. soldiers that are in Iraq, Afghanistan, those parts of the world, they are susceptible to this bite from this sandfly.
And what is the treatment in terms of whether it's just cutaneous versus whether someone has mucocutaneous or visceral involvement? What's the first line therapies for these?
Okay. Well, as I said before, it depends on the type of leishmania involved. If you have all world leishmania, you can leave the lesion and just clean the wound, maybe antibiotics if a secondary infection is added. But in leishmania mexicana, you can do the same thing. But in leishmania, in other leishmania, the pentavalent antimonials are the first-line treatment. Also, intralesional or orally. And miltefosine is another drug. Use it. And also, you can use ketoconazole or itraconazole for the treatment of this disease.
Great. Terrific. Now, myiasis. So this is the fourth most common travel-associated bug skin disease. What causes this, and where is it most common?
Well, myiasis is Dermatomia hominis here in the Americas is the most common cause. It's very interesting because there is a fly. This fly deposits his eggs on a mosquito. I don't know how they do that, but and then the mosquito goes and bites you, and deposit those eggs from this fly on your skin. And they go through your hair follicles into your subcutaneous tissue or beneath your skin. And after 2 days, it starts to grow. And some people say something's moving beneath my skin.
So most patients do have that complaint. They have that movement sensation.
Yeah. Pain and movement sensation, yes. Mm-hmm. It occurs in about 2 or 3 weeks, that.
But you probably most people would probably want them removed, punched out or excised out. Is that correct?
Yeah, but the best treatment is surgical treatment because if you don't clean very well the wound can be infected. You can get tetanus or worst, the eggs, more eggs there. So you can pull out this maggot, but there is more inside. So the surgical treatment is the best treatment. I recommend that. Okay.
And then following the surgical treatment, do you have to treat with any additional topical or systemic therapy at that point, or once you surgically removed it, it's gone? You can reassure your patient.
Only in case of the patient have a lot of lesions. If that's the case, ivermectin is very... you have to add ivermectin as a treatment.
Okay. And then they should receive a tetanus booster
if
they haven't...
Yes, very important.
Okay. And then one more thing I wanted to talk about is another emerging imported disease, nathostomiasis, or Larga migrans profundus. And I must say, after learning about this nematode, I do not think I will be eating any seafood or ceviche anytime soon. But tell me about this and its kind of life cycle or where it's most common.
Yeah, you can eat this ceviche in Miami. It's now a delicacy in Miami. Mm-hmm. Last year during the American Academy meeting, a lot of people asked me, I ate ceviche last night. Is going to happen something? No problem. But in countries that are, especially Mexico, Peru, and Ecuador, they don't have the measures. The traveler or species is an accidental host. Because this larvae is on the fish, and then if you eat this fish, raw fish, the larvae is there. Mm-hmm. You can see it, but it lengths about 1 to 5 centimeters. It's a very
big. So you're saying if people are paying attention, they would actually see it while they're eating it?
Maybe.
Okay. Maybe. All right. So well-lit restaurants.
The lemon don't kill the larvae. The lemon don't kill.
Okay. All right. So what are the clinical features of this?
Well, you eat the larva, and after a few days, it starts migrating from your GAT tract to the lungs, and then to the liver. And you can have fever, abdominal pain, maybe some pruritus or itch, but that's it. It depends where this larva is going, because it can go to the skin, but also to your eyes, to your central nervous system. So it's a very dangerous disease, this.
And do patients get kind of migratory swellings under the skin or erythematous swellings, or what do you see on the skin exactly?
They can feel the movement, but it's not like cutaneous larva migrants. The movement is a little bit more rapid. But this patient have in the arms or in the waist lesions that I can say is like a form of urticaria, but deep.
Okay.
But sometimes hemorrhages could appear, and that's a sign of this disease. But sometimes the patients only feel pain and areas of erythema.
And they'll have eosinophilia, and then how do you make the diagnosis?
Well, the diagnosis is, you can ask for a ELISA test, but that's not specific because there is a lot of nematodes. This specific test has been described in Asia. It's called immunoblot test. This 24 kilodaltons line is very specific for nastostomiasis, because the most common in China is Nastostoma spinigerum, but in Mexico, we have Nastostoma binucleatum. It's different, but the treatment is the same. But just to see what species is causing the disease.
And what is the treatment?
The treatment, well, you can use also albendazole or ivermectin. But the albendazole is taken for almost a month. Ivermectin, 2 or 3 doses is okay. I use oral corticosteroids to avoid the inflammation, because if you give the patient the treatment, the larvae can make some kind of reaction. So you have to add oral corticosteroids to avoid this inflammation, secondary inflammation, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. This was a great discussion that we had today, and thank you so much for your time and knowledge. I know our listeners will really enjoy this.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Obtaining travel-specific history is important in the initial evaluation of these patients. What countries did they visit and what season? Were there insects? Did they drink tap water or eat raw seafood? Ask about preventative measures such as, did they wear protective clothing and use insect repellent? Ask about any pre-travel vaccinations or prophylactic medications taken. Other helpful information includes whether they stayed in a hotel or hostel. The most common infestation in the returned traveler is cutaneous larva migrans. Patients will have the characteristic pruritic erythematous serpentiginous eruption, most commonly on the lower extremities and buttocks about a week after infection. Cutaneous larva migrans is transmitted by the hookworm larvae in dogs and cats. The best way to protect oneself from infection is to wear sandals and to lie on towels while in contaminated beaches in the Caribbean, Mexico, Mexico, South America, and parts of Southeast Asia. Although lesions usually resolve spontaneously, most patients will want treatment. Treatment is with ivermectin 200 micrograms per kilogram PO daily for 1 to 2 days, or with albendazole 400 milligrams PO daily for 3 days. Dengue fever is a re-emerging disease with over 50 million cases annually worldwide. It is transmitted by infected mosquitoes in Central and South America, the Caribbean, Southeast and Central Asia, and Sub-Saharan Africa. The incubation period is 4 to 7 days, and infection is most common during the summer and rainy season. Classic symptoms include sudden onset of high fever, severe headache, retroorbital pain, and myalgias and arthralgias, along with easy bruising or bleeding. A cutaneous eruption is seen in about 50% of patients about 1 to 2 days after symptom onset. Initially, there is erythema of the face, neck, and chest, which is often mistaken for a sunburn. The rash then evolves into a morbilliform eruption with petechiae and islands of sparing. Workup includes IgM and IgG. IgM is positive 4 to 5 days after symptom onset. Treatment is supportive. A rare but serious complication of dengue fever is dengue hemorrhagic fever and dengue shock syndrome. Chikungunya fever should be in the differential if you suspect dengue fever. Symptoms are similar to dengue fever, but patients typically have more severe arthralgias. Endemic areas include the Indian Ocean and Asia, but more recently cases have emerged in the Caribbean and even in the United States. Although chikungunya fever is considered a milder disease than dengue fever, patients can experience a chronic polyarthritis after infection similar to rheumatoid arthritis. Leishmaniasis should be considered when a return traveler has an asymptomatic papule on exposed areas such as the hand or ear. The papule evolves into an ulcer, often with an infiltrative border. Fortunately, most cases are the localized cutaneous form. Treatments include topical, intralesional, oral, or intramuscular pentavalent antimony, miltefacine, and peromomycin. Diagnosis is made by sending tissue for pathology, culture, and PCR. PCR is important to determine species, as this will ultimately direct treatment as certain strains are associated with a more severe mucocutaneous form. Myiasis is the fourth most common skin infection in the returning traveler from South or Central America. Patients will complain of itching, pain, and/or a moving sensation about 2 to 3 weeks after an insect bite. Surgical removal is curative. Lesions often become superinfected with bacteria. Ivermectin can be added if there are several lesions. Tetanus prophylaxis is important. Rocky Mountain spotted fever is not only seen here in the United States, but also when travelers return from Central and South America. Patients will have the same classic triad of fever, headache, and purpuric rash that favors acral surfaces about 2 to 14 days after a tick bite. The rash begins about 3 to 5 days after symptoms. Doxycycline is the treatment of choice even in children. Larval migrans profundus, or nathostomiasis, is a parasitic infection contracted from eating raw seafood in Mexico, South America, India, or Southeast Asia. After ingestion, the larvae migrate to the abdominal wall, causing abdominal pain, nausea, and vomiting. Migration to the subcutaneous tissue causes intermittent painful swellings, most often seen on the abdomen. This infection can become quite serious, as the larvae can migrate to the lungs, the eyes, and the brain. Treatment is with albendazole 400 milligrams PO daily for 21 days, or ivermectin 200 micrograms per kilogram PO for 2 days, with the possible addition of systemic steroids. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Dialogues in Dermatology. Next month, we'll have exciting new dialogues just in time for the holidays, including the very latest on lasers, fillers, and toxins. Remember, we now have a presence on Facebook, and we'd like you to join us online for previews, info, and fun. This has been Terry Cronin with Dialogues in Dermatology. Remember to stay passionate about dermatology. Keep up all the great work you're doing on behalf of your patients. Your expertise and hard work is appreciated and makes your colleagues and your community proud. Have another great month.